amazing chapter. I thought I'd read the whole thing to you so you can just get the drift of what is happening here, the excitement, the kind of strange reactions that people have to Jesus. It's quite remarkable as we look at this chapter that there are actually four different responses that I want to tease out for you and see what we can learn about ourselves from these. As in this chapter, Jesus is clearly portrayed as the Son of God. He's declared to be the Son of God. Did you notice that? He says himself, this is why I read the end of chapter 2, the Son of Man, that's what he's saying about himself, is the Lord of the Sabbath. Now, to us here, that might not seem such a huge deal to say he's the Lord of the Sabbath, but those who were hearing him immediately knew what he was saying. What is the Sabbath? The seventh day rest. Where did the seventh day rest come from? Well, the Creator God in Genesis 2 instituted the seventh day rest. And then when God, the covenant-keeping God, gave the commands to Moses in Exodus chapter 20, he there reiterated this great principle of the Sabbath day. And then over and over again in the Old Testament, God talks about the importance of keeping what? His Sabbaths. So who is the Lord of the Sabbath? The Lord of the Sabbath is the eternal God. And Jesus saying he is the Lord of the Sabbath, basically saying he is the eternal God, the Son of God. And that's the way they understood it. He said it may not freak us out. It certainly freaked them out when they heard this claim that he is the Lord of the Sabbath. He is declared to be the Son of God. But maybe you noticed also in the reading a very strange thing, that there were some other people who also said, you are the Son of God. Did you get that when we were reading? It was the devils. And Jesus was casting them out. They said, you are the Son of God. They recognized him. How did they recognize him? How did they recognize this man, this carpenter from Nazareth, as the Son of God? Well, they could obviously see beyond the outward to the spirit of the Son of God within, and they recognized his authority over them. So the demons declared that he was the Son of God. So we have his own declaration and the declaration from the demons. But he also demonstrated that he was the Son of God. It's not just declared, it's demonstrated. Do you see what he did? He used the Sabbath for good. He decided how the Sabbath should be used. They were all gathered there in the synagogue for worship on the Sabbath day, and he called out this man and he healed him. And then after that, there was this cascade of healings where people came in their droves just to touch him, and that was enough for them to be healed. He demonstrated through his power that he is the Son of God. So there's absolutely no doubt here, and that's Mark's whole purpose in telling us these things, to reveal that Jesus is the Son of God. I'm laboring this point. You maybe say he's gone on about this. It's just so important that we recognize that Jesus is revealed here as the Son of God. Because against that background, the responses of some of the people are all the more incredible. You would think, oh, the Son of God, isn't that amazing? Son of God is here. We must worship him. We must love him. We must... No, that's not the principal reactions that we see. So there are just four of them I want to tease out for you. The first one is the reaction of the Pharisees. And this is at the beginning of chapter 3. And their reaction was, this man is dangerous. We must destroy him. Isn't that incredible? Why on earth did they respond that way? The scene was like this, a synagogue, maybe a bit like this size, where people are all sitting around. There was a man with a shriveled hand. And we don't know quite what was wrong with him medically, but obviously he didn't have the use of his hand. Perhaps it was an injury that hadn't healed up properly, or a nerve injury, and the whole thing had shriveled, and he just couldn't use it. His life is blighted. He is completely disabled, crippled by this. Jesus calls him out, and we don't even need that Jesus touched him. Just in the act of coming out, this man, as he stretched out his arm, his hand is healed. And the response to this is The Pharisees said, they think this man is dangerous. We must destroy him, because they went out and they plotted with this group called the Herodians, who were a political party, to get rid of Jesus. Isn't that an incredible reaction? Why did they react this way? I don't know why they reacted this way, but let me suggest one or two things to you. I think the principal problem that the Pharisees had with Jesus was that he challenged them. Okay, he challenged their view of God in the first place, because Jesus had said, I am the Lord of the Sabbath. You're looking at God in a human flesh. And if you want to know what God is like, I am a revelation of God. And they did not like what they saw. They did not like the idea that Jesus could just take control of the Sabbath and use it for his own purposes. They didn't like the idea that God was a God who came close and cared about these people who were suffering so much because of their illness and other the affliction that came from the consequences of sin. They did not like that idea. So he challenged their view of God. He also challenged another thing, something that is very, very precious to so many of us. And those of us who have been Christians for many, many years can get very attached to traditions. I'm not saying traditions are bad. There are many traditions that are very good things, things that we do which have a great historical precedent, but we must always remember that it's so vital to separate the packaging of Christianity from its real content. And we often confuse the two. It's a recurring problem. And it certainly was a problem for the Pharisees. Jesus challenged their traditions. Look, the Sabbath and all the rules and regulations they'd made up to govern the Sabbath, this was the cornerstone of their religion. And when Jesus started chipping away at this, it was like he's going to pull the house down. They couldn't take the challenge to their traditions. And this is something I think that goes to our own hearts. We always need to be looking at, why are we doing what we're doing in church? Why are we so attached to this way of doing it? Is it because it's a way that honors Christ? Or is it just something that we've got used to as a tradition and we love it? And then I think he challenged, and this goes right to the heart of it, he challenged their attitudes. You may be noticed in the reading, Jesus looked round at them in anger. Not many places in the Gospels we read that Jesus was angry. This is one of them. Why was he angry? Deeply distressed at their stubborn hearts. Other versions say the hardness of their hearts. He could see through all of the outward religiosity to what was behind it. It was stubbornness and hardness. It was a rotten attitude was the real problem. And Jesus can see, we cannot fool him. And this is one of the things that is so kind of disturbing when we're confronted with Jesus. He can see our attitude problems, our heart problems. Well, you're saying, oh, well, this doesn't have anything to say to me. I don't want to, I wouldn't go so far as the Pharisees to say I must get rid of Jesus. Yeah, okay, well, maybe you wouldn't go that far. But do you find him a bit threatening? Is he challenging to the status quo, the way you like things done? You know, the things in your life that you've just got content with? He is very, very challenging. And we need to face up to this and not harden our hearts, not grow stubborn and refuse to accept the challenge that he brings to us, maybe to change, to move on to some new phase of our Christian life and experience. So that's the first response. He's dangerous. Destroy him.